Hello, one and all. You're listening to episode 12 of the Laser Guided Melodies Music Reviews podcast. We are Lauren James and Ed Biggs.
Hello.
And we'll be bringing you reviews of the biggest and best new releases from the week starting the 2nd and the 9th of June. We have got clips of the new records by Kasabian, Jack White, Clean Bandit, Parquet Courts. In the classic album section, we'll be remembering Nirvana's debut album Bleach, which was released 25 years ago on the 15th of June. And a few brief words on Guided by Voices B-1000, which turned 20 on June the 20th. You can also visit our website for more album reviews from the last 2 weeks, which include First Aid Kit, The Orwells, Kyle LaGrange, Bob Mould of Husker Du fame, The Fresh and Only's, James, Paul Weller's Greatest Hits Collection, and an absolutely awful record by Passenger.
Yes.
Find all these by typing in laserguidedmelodies.co.uk into the address bar of your browser.
Yes, I've decided to omit Passenger this week. My doctor advises me it's not good for me to rant. It makes me so very angry.
He hasn't got any more veins left to pop.
No. We'll be laying into Ed Sheeran next week, so that'll be quite enough. I might hit Passenger while we're at it.
Don't lay into Ed Sheeran.
Why not?
He doesn't deserve it.
Yes, he does. He spawned Passenger.
He's too kind, though.
Kindness isn't good enough. Now... Sad news that Jerry Goffin, the singer-songwriter of the 60s and 70s, died aged 75. He was Carole King's ex-husband.
Rest in peace.
So, should we play a record by them?
Yeah. Go on then.
So, we'll play his breakthrough hit called Will You Love Me Tomorrow by the Shirelles. He also wrote songs like The Locomotion, and yeah, he co-wrote all of Carole King's Tapestry. He was part of the Brill Building sort of songwriting collective that basically dominated charts in America before the Beatles came along. So here it is, Shirelles, Will You Love Me Tomorrow.
Shirelles there, paying tribute to Jerry Goffin. Let's move on to the new tracks now. Following a successful 2013, Peace have given us a taste of their upcoming record, which is due for release at some point this year. It's called Money, and here's a wee clip of it. So go find all the pennies, the ones that people ditch. You're going to be happy, you're going to be rich. Well, that was Money by Peace.
Yeah, this is a slightly better song than World Pleasure, the first taster that they gave us.
Are you at peace with that song?
Yes, thank you. Great. You've been winding up for that one for some time, haven't you?
Yeah, brewing it up when we were listening to the song.
Well, World Pleasure was sort of 7 minutes long, quite meandering, but looking forward to this new album. Now, we don't know what it's called, we don't know when it's coming out, but it's going to be some point in 2014.
Well, we've only got one single for you this week, and that was it, so we're going to move on to the albums now. Kasabian have released their fifth album. I don't even know how you say this, like 48:13?
Everyone's referring to it as 48:13.
Right. Yeah. The colon doesn't...
No, colon, no, you don't have to say colon, it. No. basically, it's called that because that's how long it lasts. And
pretentious or cool?
We'll see after the leap. Tell us what we're going to play.
They released it a couple of weeks ago. It currently sits at number one, predictably, on the UK albums chart. We played you a clip of Easy a few weeks ago, and here's another one called Treat. Ed's review will appear on the other side of the bridge.
Yeah.
were just listening to Treat from Kasabian's latest album, 4813.
Well, like you said, rather predictably, this album currently sits at number one in the album charts. So, where to start? On our modest staff, it's always been sort of left to me to try and stick up for Kasabian in the face of Lauren and Matthew's sort of criticism.
I don't have any criticism for Kasabian.
But the criticism's always been, you know, they're kind of a band for sort of unreformed football hooligans and, you know. But I've always stuck up for them on the basis that you're not supposed to take Kasabian seriously. If you're looking for something really profound, you've come to the wrong place with Kasabian.
I genuinely think they have a talent for a great song.
Yeah, but you only need to look at some of their media pronouncements over the last 10 years. I mean, they've been going for 10 years now to be able to tell this. There is absolutely no way that Tom Meehan and Serge Pizzorno, who are like the public face of the band, there's no way they take themselves as seriously as they say in interviews.
Do you say Serge? I say Sergey.
It's Serge.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Songs like Clubfoot and Empire and Rewired and Switchblade Smiles, they wouldn't work if they were just sort of furrowed-browed seriousness. The whole point is, you know, they're a bit fun. And that you're kind of in on the joke with the band in a way, you know, and you're not taking them seriously yourself. There's like a there's a give and take, and it's always there's been chemistry, and it's always worked. But this is where 4813 falls down. It starts to take itself very seriously. It's kind of it's political, but only in kind of like the most abstract and indirect sense of the word. It's just a vague sense of anti-establishment posturing. I mean, there's that song Glass, which has a spoken word outro where he says things like the biggest criminal I ever met was a guy wearing a suit and things like that. And it's just vague sort of, and you know, sticking it to the man, and it seems kind of hackneyed, and it's not very becoming of Kasabian at all. And particularly as it's a record that Tom Meehan's always said is going to be stripped back and direct. This is why it's called 4813. It's just an idea of going, oh, let's not give it a title, let's just refer to it by how long it lasts. But for an album that's supposed to be stripped back and direct, a lot of it feels very cluttered. The opening song after an instrumental intro called Bumblebee is not going to do anything to win the cynics over. I mean, it actually goes, everybody jump, 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 you know, in that kind of really rubbish 90s novelty hip-hop way. It fails on its own terms and in comparison to previous Kasabian records. It's also very long-winded at times. I mean, that song you heard, you only heard a little clip from it, but it lasts nearly 7 minutes, and it's got no need. It sprawls and without any sense of discipline. So, and it's not as if Kasabian can't do sort of eclectic and variety, because West Rider Pauper Lunatic Asylum, their third album, was testament to that. All sorts of different kinds of sounding songs on it. And to a lesser extent, Velociraptor did the same. I think this is an attempt to experiment with structure that really hasn't worked at all, and it showed them up to be sort of quite a hollow band when they sort of they don't play to their strengths. And I awarded it 4 out of 10. What have you made of the singles off it so far? I mean,
I see what you mean about they've become more serious, because Kasabian have always been for me a band that gets played in clubs, that gets played big moments on TV, that people know they can chant along to. Even if they don't know the word, there'll be the guitar riff that they can chant along to. And there's so many of their hit songs that do that. And I know they might be trying to diversify a bit, but that is their strength. You know, it's not people who are looking for another, like you said, another club for another Empire, another Fire, would probably be disappointed by this album.
There's nothing on that here, funnily enough, except the song Easy. I mean, I know that works precisely because it's tongue-in-cheek in the way that songs like Cut Off and Shoot the Runner work. And there's nothing else on the record that's like that. There's some sort of neat parts, but most of it just feels very, very silly. But they're not
silly, serious. You mean?
Yes, it's kind of silly, but they're taking it too seriously, if you know what I mean. So basically, it's the chemistry has not worked this time around. I guess it's my turn now. Next album released on the same week was the new record by Jack White, erstwhile the creative genius behind the White Stripes, the Raconteurs, and the Dead Weather. His second solo album is called Lazaretto. It debuted at number 4 in the album's chart, and here's a clip of Temporary Ground.
They discovered nothing new, but returned on home with answers of sad existence clues. All the creatures have a heart now, nothing but God is left to know. And why he left us all here hanging with an illusion of a home.
Moving with that motion, screaming with that sound across the
So that was a clip of a Jack White song from the new album Lazaretto. It's called Temporary Ground. In a bit of role reversal, I'm going to be the Mayo and Lauren is going to be the Kermode on this one.
Take it away, Lauren. You've built it up too much. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed Jack White's Lazaretto. I enjoyed Blunderbuss, but I think Lazaretto takes what was successful on Blunderbuss, takes it a step further and then just mixes it up, turns it on its head and produces something that is hard to place at first, but is, I'd say, one of the most brilliant album of the year that I've heard so far. It's managed to avoid the same overshadowing that, say, Chris Martin's Coldplay's Ghost Stories has had, because Jack White has obviously had the same personal problems as Chris Martin in terms of divorce, a split, kind of a messy.
So he divorced his second wife now? Is that it?
Jack White?
Yeah.
Karen Elson, yeah.
I thought that happened a few years ago.
But it's all bubbled back recently. But no, I don't want to focus on that because it hasn't overshadowed how people have heard the album. And you don't listen to it and you don't think this is a revenge album, it's an album full of hatred, it's none of that. But somehow he does manage to air his grievances. It's a lot more passionate, and ultimately the whole album's about women, and in the same way it's the women that make the album. So I think on Black Bat Licorice there's Olivia Jean from the Black Bells who says something like, "Oh, behave," and that's something about that is really cool. And then also
there's a sense of kind of sort of vaudeville about it, very showmanship.
Definitely,
it's got an emotional core to it.
After Temporary Ground, I'd say that's my favourite track off the album. Temporary Ground, you heard, I think it's Lily Mae Riche, the fiddle player. Her voice is it's so sublime, it's perfect, and it makes that track. I mean, it makes it the best track on the album. So it's, you know, there's also influence from Ruby Amanfu, I think her name is, who you would have heard last on Love Interruption from Blunderbuss, and she's back on this album to bolster Jack White's very nasal American distinctive voice with a bit of, you know, mellow or caramel tones. I'd say the top tracks from the album for me are Temporary Ground, Black Bat Licorice and Three Women. But there's just so many great aspects of the album. It's blues. I'd say, in a nutshell, it's blues, but also you've got prog elements, avant-garde rock, alternative, country, folk, all sorts to find on there. And Jack White manages to blend it together effortlessly, come up with some surprising new sounds that you wouldn't have thought he'd been able to. And it's a very honest album if you listen to it. Songs like Just One Drink, kitchen sink rock drama, and more personal, more honest than we've ever heard from Jack White before. You know, he's on about, even if it's not about him, he takes the persona of someone who's an alcoholic and his girl doesn't like him. And it's quite a funny song. It's like a garage rock song, but it's got all these funny sexual metaphors in it, which you don't really expect from Jack White, because in the media he's so serious, and his previous work's been pretty serious too.
Things I always thought Jack White's he's kind of a master of disguise when he's talking about his own feelings. He'll sort of wrap them up with, like, in a third person, or exaggerating to make a point.
Yeah, and he said
this is very direct as a record.
Exactly.
The change suits him.
Yeah, he has said that it's not about his relationship with Karen Elson, and he said adapted from some short stories he wrote when he was a teenager. But the album's about women and trying to understand them and penetrate their psychology. I gave it a 9 because from the first listen it hits, it clicks, and I'm not the kind of person that happens with a lot. You know, I was really impressed by it, and I really like everything that Jack White does. I think he has the Midas touch when it comes to music. Doesn't matter what his side project is. I know Ed doesn't agree with me in terms of the Dead Weather, but he just can't do any wrong in my eyes. Ed, what do you think?
Well, I've only just got a little bit to add. I mean, I thought it was a better record than Blunderbuss.
Yeah, agreed.
But I feel that the White Stripes' strength was always in their simplicity and how basic all the building blocks were. I've always thought of Jack White's solo stuff that Meg White's basic rhythms force that simplicity. It just isn't there, and that the basicness made White Blood Cells and Elephant so wonderful. I think it sounds a little bit sort of maximalist at times, a little bit cluttered, and I think some songs sort of drift as a result. But it goes along at a fair old pace. It never lingers. The listener's never bored. I thought it was very solid. But Lauren's View is the one that is going to go down in the history books.
Rightly so. Well, that's all said about Jack White. Next up, we've got chart stars Clean Bandit, who have released their debut album, New Eyes, at the beginning of the month. It reached the top three, and here's a clip of Mozart's House. Skip a beat. Found myself on stage, but I hate to speak. I said, I don't know, skip a beat. It's my right to dance, I've got to left feet. I said, I don't know, skip a beat. Wanna be social, but I hate to greet. I said, I don't know, skip a beat. That was Mozart's House by Clean Bandit from their debut, New Eyes. But before you rush out and go and buy it, Ed is... vein pulsing. There's a rant coming on.
Not a rant, just slightly disappointed, really. I mean, okay, Clean Bandit have had, I think, 2 number one singles now. They're a four-piece formed at Cambridge University about 4 years ago. They had recent chart success with a handful of singles, and now they've delivered us a full-length LP. Their whole selling point is using original and sampled strings and mixing it in with their kind of regular four to the floor kind of house music, and it's led many to remark upon the similarity to Disclosure. But while Disclosure was kind of, you know, a pretty concise look back on a 25 years of British dance music history, this mutation of dance music and classical music is something that didn't need to happen. Nobody asked for it. That clip of Mozart's House, it starts with a kind of thrown down challenge. You just hear a voice saying, so you think electronic music is boring? You think it's stupid? You think it's repetitive? Well, no, I don't actually, but in your hands, yes it is. I mean, for too much of the record, it's squeaky clean, it's very contrived, to the point where it feels just like the product of a focus group. You know, this little bit needs to go here, the beat should break down here. There's a clutch of tracks that offer a bit of promise at the end, and the fact that Clean Bandit have actually been bold enough to feed classical music and electronic beats and rhythms indicates a degree of bravery in the first place. So why does everything else sound so safe and conservative? It's a debut that doesn't work. Some good songs, overall just doesn't sound, that it's not good.
I'm not very familiar with them, but in my eyes, anyone compared to Disclosure is a bit naff. So
we'll have to disagree.
That's the bottom line for me.
Yeah.
Finally, of the albums, we've got the rather excellent New York guitar group Parquet Courts, kind of weird name, who have released their second album, Sunbathing Animal. They released that a few weeks ago, and it hit number 55 in the charts, which is not that impressive, but Ed is very impressed with the album and will be singing praises on the other side of this clip of Ducking and Dodging. Ducking and Dodging, not dogging, from Sunbathing Animal by Parquet Courts.
We said dogging there because when I typed out the notes for this, I missed out the D, so ducking and dogging.
And then we came up with this awesome idea. What could, if dogging is what dogging is, what could ducking be?
Boat sex, I think you said. Yeah. And we're rather drifting off the point here. Anyway, so if you're unaware of Parquet Courts, they released a really superb debut back in 2012 called Light Up Gold. But it didn't reach Britain until 2013. And it was just one of the most infectious guitar records of the year. It was so refreshing, even though it takes its cues from kinds of music that have come before. Stuff like The Strokes, you know, 70s new wave bands like Television and British post-punk bands like Wire. There's all the ingredients were similar, but it meant that the mixture, when you heard it, it was like, I've not heard guitar music sound this fresh in ages. anyway, and it was also proof that guitar music is never entirely out of ideas. There's always someone out there to, you know, put a new twist on, even, you know, sorry, even just to put a new twist on something, for even if it's not original. So this new record comes astonishingly quickly when you consider that they've clocked up over 100,000 miles in touring in the last 18 months.
Whoa.
It's so energetic in terms of its ideas, even though the rhythmic variety is broader this time round. There are two great songs. One's called Instant Disassembly, and another... Sorry, I'm just getting my notes here. Another called She's Rolling, which are quite slow to unravel. They take nearly 8 minutes on both counts. But it's just like Television and Marquee Moon in that respect. But then you get these really minimalist one-note thrashes that are almost approximate to Minor Threat and straight-edge hardcore. With the title track, Sunbathing Animal, and the song you just heard, Ducking and Dodging, it's just one chord played over again. It's just dum 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 dum. I would recommend them to you if you're a fan of The Strokes or The Vaccines and just of British post-punk and American new wave in general. It's an incredible record, even better when you listen to it on headphones. It's a great follow-up to match a great debut, 8 out of 10.
Boom. It was good that we finished our album reviews on a high. Because we're moving on to the anniversaries now. It has been 25 years since Nirvana released their first album, Bleach. It sounds a little different to the stereotypical Nirvana sound from Smells Like Teen Spirit that's found on Nevermind. See if you can hear the similarity on these clips of Blue and About a Girl. Just heard clips of Blue and About a Girl from Nirvana's Bleach. It's an aging album, 25 years old, and it has seen them inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year.
Well, everybody knows about Nevermind. It's just one of those mega selling records that came to epitomise an entire subgenre, in addition to selling many millions of copies. Even its cover art is pretty iconic. But their first album, Bleach, is more or less an entirely different prospect. It was released on a label called Sub Pop and recorded for $606 in an independently owned studio in Seattle, where the tools at the producer Jack Endino's disposal were rather limited. This meant that it had a completely different set of expectations commercially. Bleach is very much of its time in respect of the guitar sounds, because it sounds quite sort of scuzzy and distorted and very definitively lo-fi, and how quite a lot of records sounded at that time. And you get a sense of kind of live in the studio, don't you? Because all the sounds kind of like rattle and sort of careen off each other. It feels like the band's all playing at the same time in the same room. But it's the drum sounds that give away the key difference here, because Dave Grohl, who does the drums on Nevermind, hasn't joined the band yet. I mean, the trademark sound of Nevermind, to me, it's like the massive drum sounds that really sort of made Nirvana a lot more FM friendly. But here, it's the original drummer called Chad Channing. It just sounds quite muted and again, very of its time. I mean, I'm sure you could probably hear that off the two clips. What do you think?
Made for small, scuzzy Seattle rock clubs, you know, and that's where... That was Nirvana's stomping ground at first. It made them big, launched them into the world, and gave them the perfect foundation to launch, yeah, like you said, more radio-friendly things from.
Yeah. And if you look at the back of the album, there's a fourth member called Jason Everman, but he wasn't really in the group at all, but he's only credited because he stumped up the money for $606. But there's another sort of key difference here. You can hear the melodicism that set Kurt Cobain apart from quite a lot of his peers on About a Girl. It could pass for a Beatles song. It's very, very, like I said, melodic. Sounds like it could have been a chart single. Of course, Nirvana were pretty obscure back then. It's just one of the many contradictions of Cobain himself. Apparently, he's tried to suppress these sort of songwriting tendencies for this record, but they still shine through occasionally. And the two clips we played, very sort of contrasted. Blue is kind of the sound as people would have expected, but About a Girl surprised quite a lot of people who listened to it the first time round. So what you get is a very accessible but very underground record. It's kind of the perfect mixture. And as I said on the article on my site, perhaps this is the version of Nirvana that Cobain would want Nirvana to be remembered as. Underground, but still writing sort of forward-thinking pop music. Mm. He can never come to terms with the success of Nevermind, which is why Inutero is such a it's a flinch from the spotlight. Mm. He can never sort of suppress those songwriting tendencies to actually write pretty pop and accessible music, whilst still feel like he wasn't betraying his underground roots, and that is one of the reasons why he committed suicide 20 years ago. Just couldn't come to terms with what his music had become.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, I only could see their legacy.
Yeah, but it has had some sort of unforeseen side effects, like his
silver lining.
His avatar being used on Guitar Hero. I mean, something that a lot of Nirvana fans have got very, very upset about. But he's still so marketable as an icon.
Yeah, you see people who probably couldn't hum a Nirvana song wearing Kurt Cobain t-shirts.
Exactly.
But the obvious silver lining of Nirvana's disbanding was the Foo Fighters, which have just gone from strength to strength over the years and are still ploughing on with Dave Grohl rocking out.
Do you like Foo Fighters?
Yes, I do.
I know, I don't.
Why not?
All their songs sound the same.
No, they don't.
MTV Power Chord. Nonsense.
Anyway, that will be a debate for another time.
Okay, just briefly, it's been 20 years since indie mainstays Guided by Voices released B-1000. Now, have you heard much Guided by Voices?
Yes, I've heard a bit. I'd describe their music as geeky, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what hit me the most.
If you thought Bleach was lo-fi, Guided by Voices is lo-fi. I mean, if you've never heard them before, they're pretty much an indie rock institution. They're the American equivalent of The Fall. They've been around since 1986. They're fronted by a songwriter and singer called Robert Pollard. They produce albums on a bewilderingly prolific basis. They released 21 albums and God knows how many EPs and standalone singles since 1987. And that, you have to factor in an 8-year hiatus between 2004 and 2012. I mean, they've released out 2 albums this year already. I mean, Matthew Langham, our co-writer, he reviewed the first one of those called Motivational Jumpsuit, got a positive review. And Pollard himself maintains a solo career alongside all of this, and consequently he's got something like 1,700 songs registered to his name with copywriting houses. B-1000 is generally regarded as the highlight of his career, along with Alien Lanes, which was released a year later. They get through 20 songs in 34 minutes. They're about a minute and 20 long on average, and it's just Tom picking up an idea, as soon as he's got bored of it, throw it away, get on with something else. It's an entirely different approach to music, very underground and very unique.
Weirdly effective.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend tracking this down on its own if you've never heard them before. It's kind of the first thing to do once you've... There's a compilation out there called Human Amusements at Hourly Rates, which is a very handy whistle-stop tour of their career right up until the hiatus in 2004. It's a great accessible entry point to their back catalogue, which is vast, and you'd have to spend a lot of money to collect it all, basically. But B-1000 is one of the first ports of call you should make afterwards. We don't have any clips because, well, frankly, some of the songs only last 24 seconds. It's like Swans, but one clip alone is not an accurate representation. So
stubbornly out of the box.
Yeah.
Is that it?
That's it.
We're done. Well, in a week or two, we will return with episode 13, which will be hosted by both of us again, as usual.
And as usual, we'll be talking about significant music news and new tracks. We'll be reviewing new records and some classic albums. We'll be talking about new records by Lana Del Rey, Klaxons, The Antlers, and Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
There's also a reissue of the C86 compilation, a landmark moment in the development of British indie music. In addition, there are also albums coming out by Linkin Park, Deadmau5.
Deadmau5, yeah. Deadmau5.
Deadmau5. Tom Veck, Example, Alex G, and Cerebral Ballsy. If we're not talking about them the next time, they will definitely be reviewed on our website, because we are busy people.
Yeah.
Website that you have to type into the address bar of your browser, so that's laserguidedmelodies.co.uk. If you just search Laser Guided Melodies, we won't come up. We're not sure why, but we don't. Yeah, so
getting that changed any month now.
Yeah, it's not hard, you just got to remember to do that.
Yeah.
In the album anniversary section, we'll be looking back at Ray's Light's 2004 debut, Up All Night, and wondering why it was so successful and how it went so badly wrong
it
for
really
them.
It really did go badly wrong for Johnny Burrell, didn't it?
If you're into our jovial chatter and pretentious analysis and occasional ranting, and you'd like to join in the conversation, you can like us on Facebook at Laser Guided Melodies and be our friend forever. You can find us on Tumblr by searching for the same thing, or follow us on Twitter by searching at LG Melodies. But before we go, we've decided we're going to pick out our albums of the fortnight. Ed?
Well, what should we say? I think number one's got to be Jack White, hasn't
yeah.
it? You gave it 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
Second, Parquet Courts.
Cool.
And third, I think Kyla LaGrange, actually, I've gone for. Very sort of a cool and icy electro by a British-born female singer. Very good. So, until next time.
Goodbye.